Last April, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced the government's new zero-tolerance policy at the border.
People are not going to caravan or otherwise stampede our border. I have put in place a zero-tolerance policy for illegal entry on our southwest border.
This included the criminal prosecution of all adults who crossed the border illegally. And if they had their children with them, they couldn't be detained together, so that meant they would be separated.
We had been looking for examples of young children who had been separated from their families, and we thought a good place to go would be immigration court.
Astrid Galván has been covering the impact of the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy for the Associated Press.
I showed up to court, sat down on the wooden bench, and the first thing I noticed was these two little kids kind of in the middle row with their feet hanging from the wooden bench. And a short while later, this little baby comes in. And I thought, wow, he looks really small. He didn't look much bigger than my baby, who's 8 months old. So I thought, you know, he was under a year.
The baby had been taken from his father after being detained while crossing the border together. The father was eventually deported back to Honduras. And here was this baby standing trial in front of an immigration judge without his parents.
And he had this bottle with his name labeled onto it. His name is Joan. He was really calm. He was playing with this little purple ball that he would throw on the floor and it would light up different colors.
According to immigration law, all unaccompanied minors must appear in front of a judge, regardless of their age. So this judge had to determine whether or not baby Johan would stay in the custody of the U.S. government or be sent back to be reunited with his parents in Honduras. As part of his job, the judge had to ask whether the defendant understood the court proceedings.
So the baby is brought up in front of the judge. He kind of looked at him and said, you know, I'm embarrassed to even ask this. Can a one-year-old learn immigration law? But, you know, this is where we are. This is the case before me.
This happened back in July. Just a week prior, national outcry had led a federal judge in California to order U.S. immigration authorities to reunite all parents and their children below the age of five by July 10th.
The judge asked the ICE attorney, hey, are these kids going to be reunited with their parents by the deadline? And the attorney said he didn't know.
The judge ended up granting him what's called a voluntary departure order. While ICE missed the deadline to reunite him by over a week, he was eventually flown back to his parents. And Astrid, the AP reporter who's been covering immigration for several years now, said that as she watched the proceedings, she couldn't really believe what she was seeing.
I have never seen anything like this or even remotely close to something like this.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, part one of our special report on the aftermath of the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy. What happens to the hundreds of children who can't be reunited with their families because their parents have been deported?
A federal judge in California ruled overnight, more overnight news, that the Trump administration must reunite separated immigrant families within 30 days. The order after an ACLU...
The government's deadline to reunite all the children separated from their families as part of the zero-tolerance policy was July 26th. After the deadline was announced, immigration authorities scrambled to find parents and reunite families. And all over the country, immigrant parents were crying and hugging their children as they met them at bus terminals and airports. This included 30-year-old Morena Mendoza from El Salvador, who hadn't seen her 12-year-old son, Osmar, for almost 3 months.
Morena, le mandan saludos a las de otros países y otros continentes.
After getting bailed out of detention by an advocacy group called Mi Gente, Morena got a phone call from her son's social worker. 2 days later, she was on her way to the Miami airport to be finally reunited with her son.
Esta es nuestra lucha.
Morena and her son finally embrace each other in silence, but tightly. And after she breaks down, 12-year-old Osmar begins to console his own mother. On the way out, Morena and her son held hands. And while driving to their temporary Miami home, Osmar asked if they could stop to buy Spanish limes from a guy selling them on the side of the road. It was a small taste of the home that he and his mom had left behind. Morena's asylum case is still pending, and while she waits to hear, at least she'll be able to be with her son. But not all families have been as fortunate as Morena and Osmar. After the deadline passed, the government claimed to have reunited all of the separated kids in time. However, of the more than 2,500 kids torn away from their parents, the reality is that more than 700 children are still in U.S. custody. In an unprecedented move, the U.S. government has deemed these children ineligible for reunification. In some cases, they cite parents' criminal records, but lawyers say their definition of criminality is overly broad. In other cases, they say they've lost track of the parents, this after deporting them without their children. Latino USA producer Andres Caballero takes us into one of those stories.
After hearing about cases where parents who had been separated from their kids were already being deported without them, Patrick McDonald, the bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times in Mexico City, decided to get on a plane to Guatemala.
And I knew that at the Air Force base in Guatemala City, every day several plane loads of deportees were arriving. My thought was, well, if I waited at this airbase, I might find a parent who had been separated from their children upon their arrest in the States and then deported.
When Patrick arrived to the airbase, he saw many families waiting outside for their loved ones. He said that morning, at least four plane loads of people had come in.
The last of the four planes came through. We found a family outside, very emotional, very distraught, particularly the mother. Her name was Claudia Gonzalez, and they told me the story.
Claudia was waiting for her husband, Ovidio Batres Morales, who was deported after being detained for crossing into the U.S. illegally with their 7-year-old daughter, Ashley. Claudia and Ovidio had broken up and were no longer living together, but she still went to the airport to find him and demand answers about their daughter. Claudia said she was indecisive on whether or not to let Ashley make the trip to the U.S. with her dad. She had heard that families were being separated at the border, but she thought it would just be for a little while, and then they'd be reunited. She even made sure to sign a document giving Ovidio full custody of Ashley in case anything went wrong. She said that with a difficult financial situation at home, she thought Ashley could at least go to a better school, maybe one day become the doctor she pretended to be whenever she noticed her mom feeling sick. She recalled saying bye to Ashley before she left to the U.S. with her dad. She told her daughter she was allowing her to go on the journey, but that she would be taking a piece of mom's heart with her. She told her she wasn't giving her away, that she still loved her, but that she simply wanted a better future for her.
The emotional impact of her seeing her husband kind of walk out of those doors of the airbase without her daughter, I mean, it was really kind of overwhelming for Claudia. And she later said, what if I lose my daughter forever? And she was hysterical in tears, which was a contrast to her husband, who was very sullen and withdrawn and completely looked like a broken man. He kept saying, I never thought they would take my daughter away.
Weeks after Ovidio was deported to Guatemala, we hired a local reporter to go visit him at the house where he once lived with Ashley, in Monteverde, a small town in the south. Ovidio lives in a 2-room adobe house. A small river flows at the foot of the hill beneath where the house sits. Ovidio is a soft-spoken man. He still carries the trauma of walking for days and being caught by Border Patrol in Texas. He says the most difficult part after crossing the border was being separated from Ashley. They then put him in a hielera, the infamous air-conditioned room known as the icebox. He says he didn't sleep. All he could think about was his daughter. Ovidio was then taken to an El Paso detention center, And about 7 weeks later, they told him he had no chance of staying in the U.S. He says he asked the officers if he could talk to Ashley, but they told him they had no idea where she was. And then he says they would take him into a room every day and ask him to sign some papers. He can't read or write. He says he can't speak English, and he says no Spanish translator was provided for him. He refused to sign. He kept telling them he didn't want to sign, that he didn't want to be deported without his daughter. He says the officers assured him that he was not signing his deportation.
Coming up on Latino USA, what happens to Ashley's father, Ovidio? Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Babbel, a language program that quickly teaches real-life conversations in a new language. Choose from Spanish, French, Italian, German, and more. Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons use interactive dialogues and speech recognition technology to get you speaking your new language correctly and confidently. Try Babbel for free by downloading the app or going to Babbel, Babbel.com.
Hey, this is Stretch Armstrong.
And this is Bobbito Garcia, the hosts of What's Good.
We're back with a brand new season.
We've got Erykah Badu, Lenny Kravitz, Black Thought, and more.
You'll hear B-side stories from A-list guests. Subscribe now.
And we're back with the story of Ovidio, a Guatemalan migrant who crossed into the United States with his daughter, Ashley. And after they were torn apart, Ovidio was put into detention, where he says ICE officers were pressuring him to sign papers that he didn't understand. Producer Andres Caballero picks up the story.
Ovidio says there were two officers who were particularly intimidating. They kept telling him to sign over and over again, until eventually he did. Ovidio doesn't know exactly what he signed. And advocates and attorneys say it's hard to know because the government hasn't provided any copies of documents signed by immigrants. But ultimately, whatever it was that he signed, Ovidio unwittingly relinquished his right to reunite with Ashley. The government said that of the nearly 400 cases where parents were deported, in over 100 of them, immigrants actually waived the right to reunite with their kids. Megan Fino Velasquez is the co-founder and director of the Center on Immigration and Child Welfare, an advocacy group.
And now their lawyers are questioning the legality of these orders because they're hearing that their clients didn't understand what they were signing or that they signed something under pressure. For example, they're distressed over not knowing where their children are, and they're being led to believe that this voluntary deportation is the only way to be reunited with their kids.
I reached out to ICE for comment about parents who may have unwittingly signed voluntary deportation forms. They did not respond. The American Civil Liberties Union recently filed several affidavits in court stating that many of the parents did not know what they had signed when they gave up their right to be reunited with their kids. While in detention, Ovidio called his brother for help, Ashley's uncle, who lives in Maryland. The uncle sent $500 to a lawyer he found in Texas, but he never heard from him again.
Hello?
Hello.
When I called the uncle, he seemed confused and overwhelmed by all of the government paperwork. He said he didn't know if or when they would let Ashley stay with him. None of her family members seem to know for sure where she is, but they think she's in a shelter somewhere in Arizona. Ashley's caseworker did not reply to several calls. The phone number has a Phoenix area code. When a minor's parents are deported, finding a relative in the U.S. who's fit to care for the kid is always an option. But the process can still be confusing and difficult to navigate, especially without the help of a lawyer. And if you're undocumented, it could be even harder, because coming forward means sharing your information with the government. From her shelter, thousands of miles away from her parents, Ashley asked her social worker to call her dad. Ovidio recalls Ashley crying and telling him she wanted to get out of the shelter. She kept saying she wanted to go with her uncle, or back to Guatemala with her dad. Ashley's parents hope she'll be allowed to stay with her uncle. That way, everything they went through won't have been in vain. Here's Ashley's mom, Claudia, again.
Es bien difícil porque no pensando lo que le fuera a pasar, ese encierro que tenía allá, pues sí. Tantas cosas que me han contado.
Claudia says it's hard to imagine what could happen to Ashley being out there in that shelter, that she'd heard horrible things.
No sé qué día llamó, dijo que tenía piojos, que estaba mal.
Ashley called her once and told her that she was covered in lice and that other kids at the shelter pinched her. And one day, Ashley's social worker called. She told Claudia that Ashley was acting up. When Claudia finally spoke to Ashley, she said she had had enough, that she was sick of being there. Right now, Ashley remains among the over 400 kids with deported parents who are still floating in the government system. And if her uncle doesn't end up getting the custody, there are a few things that could happen. A judge could order her to be flown to Guatemala and reunite with her parents, which can be a difficult process that could take months. Or, if she stays in the U.S., she could end up in the foster care system. But Ashley isn't the only kid in limbo. Advocates and attorneys say that the government had no clear plan on how to reunite parents with their children. The zero tolerance policy is now essentially defunct. But even if the government succeeds at reuniting the rest of the children, experts are now worried about the policy's lasting psychological impact on kids like Ashley.
What's her future now? Is she going to go back to Monteverde?
That's Patrick, the LA Times reporter you heard from earlier.
And what lasting impact will this have on this girl of 7 years old? I mean, I think those are kind of imponderables, but I mean, those are some of the questions I'm left with.
It's been 2 weeks since the judge's reunification deadline passed, and there are nearly 600 children who are still away from their parents. Like Ashley, about half of them are from Guatemala. Last week, the federal government squared off with the ACLU in district court and tried to argue that the ACLU should take over the responsibility of reuniting these remaining children. But Judge Dana Sabra responded that the U.S. government is 100% responsible for failing to reunite these children in time. And it's up to them to finish the task.
Our thanks to producer Andres Caballero for that story. That was part one of our special on family separation, Torn Apart. Later this week, we'll delve into the shelter system itself and talk to the Latino man who runs the most sprawling network of shelters for migrant children in the United States. Our episode was produced by Andres Caballero and edited by Sofia Paliza Carr. The Latino USA team includes Marlon Bishop, Miguel Macias, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, and Sayer Quevedo, with help from Fernanda Chavarri. Our engineers are Jeannie Montalvo and Stephanie LeBeau. Our production manager is Natalia Fidel-Holtz. Our fellows are Virginia Lora and Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. And if you like the music you heard on this episode, be sure to check out latinousa.org and see our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. The Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. And the Marguerite Casey Foundation. Change for families, by families.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, we meet Juan Sanchez, the CEO of Southwest Key Programs. It's the largest nonprofit that shelters migrant children, some who arrived on their own, others torn apart from their parents.
We do not run detention centers or mini prisons, so we're not holding these kids. We're serving these kids in a way that's getting them ready to be reunited with their family.
That's next time on Latino USA.
As soon as you wake up, you need the latest. And that is why Up First is here. It is NPR's morning news podcast. In just 10 minutes, you can start your day informed. Listen to Up First on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.